Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome to the Fighting on Film podcast, the podcast all about classic and obscure war movies, from the Normandy landings to the days of chivalry and swords. If it's been captured on film, we're going to try and cover it. I'm Robbie of RM Military History.
I'm Matthew Moss of Historical Firearms and the Armourer's Bench.
Hello, welcome back to Fighting on Film. Now, you didn't notice because we banked up content, but Matt's back from his trip to America. We're amazed to have him back. Thank God.
So professional of us to pair ahead of time, wasn't
it? I know,
it?
Right? Yeah. Usually we're scrambling around where I'm like, Matt's got a composium in America. What do I do?
Yeah.
But this time we were prepared.
Three whole episodes in the can.
All right. Amazing. Amazing.
Amazing stuff.
No, we'll be back to semi-weekly or however we do it. But how was America? Did it go well?
It was great, yeah. Had a little holiday beforehand, and then I was at a conference, and I gave a paper on the Winchester Repeating Arms Company's role in World War One, which was far more than you could imagine. They made all sorts. And then I led a roundtable discussion on sharing the history of firearms on social media, which was really interesting, you know, talking about various different platforms, how they're all different from each other, and the struggles for museums and researchers and historians to try and make this stuff engaging and get across to the public. It was really good. It was a lot of interaction on that one, and it was really rewarding. It was a good conference.
Oh, great, good. Because obviously that's what you do in your day to day. You're constantly sharing bits and bobs, and I know from talking to Matt behind the scenes, like he's on so many Instagram accounts, so many like Telegram accounts, trying to locate weapons, find out where they're going. So like, it's, who better to have than you sharing that, you know?
Well, yeah, it was interesting, that side of things, because talking to all these people that work in museums, curators, and you know, those kind of backgrounds, they're busy doing their curating jobs. They haven't got time really to go, and not all of these museums have, you know, the budget to have like a social media team. So you had some curators were doing it themselves, and some didn't have the time to do it at all, but really wanted to. So it was really interesting to get like lots of perspectives on it, and then, you know, the research side of things as well. So it was good. It was really good. And, you know, happy to be back. And looking forward to talking about something typically foff.
Very
esoteric.
So if you've read
things that, you know, we often do films that people have never heard of. And they're quite obscure.
Yes.
But today, really, we were pushing that envelope.
Really are. So before we talk about that, let's go to our listener question this week. So we put a question out to our listeners on the Twitter. Please follow us at Fighting on Film. If you don't already, the best place to keep abreast of the show. So I asked, what are your favorite war/military TV shows? And these are in no particular order. So Kerry Thomas says, obviously, Banner Brothers in the Pacific. I think that goes for a lot of people. When you talk TV shows and history, it comes up so much. But he also puts Generation Kill, Tour of Duty, Pathfinders, Ain't Half Hot Mum, Frankie's House, Danger UXB, World at War. And he put, he did enjoy Rogue Heroes. Ian McClellan goes with, from my youth, it's got to be Secret Army or Colditz. And Tour of Duty for pure nostalgia value. We have David, the host of the Cold War channel. If you haven't checked out his work on YouTube, please go and do it. Really great stuff. He goes with MASH, Tour of Duty, China Beach, The Pacific, Banner Brothers, Rome. Does Rome count? He put, I think it counts. It's historical. It's got,
yeah, there's a bit of conflict in there, sure.
Yeah. Hello, hello.
It's swords and chivalry, we wouldn't know.
No, we wouldn't know. What's that? What? Crikey. Eddie Bond goes with Tour of Duty. Spy Hard's podcast goes with MASH again. A lot for Tour of Duty this week. I wasn't expecting it.
I noticed that too.
Yeah, I mean, I really dig Tour of Duty. I think it's really like a bit of an...
The ones I've seen, I enjoyed.
Yeah, it's really great. It's kind of like, you know, a big budget 80s combat but for NAM. That's how it kind of feels.
I suppose so, yeah.
But a few more for Tour of Duty, a few more for Generation Kill. Andy and Brum goes with Dad's Army. And then The Machine Gunners, one for kids there. Remember that book when I was little? Those kids nick the machine gun out of the Dornier. Do you remember that? You ever read that?
Oh, I vaguely remember that, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good one. Craig Seaton goes with Generation Kill again. Mark F. goes with Combat. Tim Maycock, another one for Generation Kill. Two Bombers goes with Das Boot. And then Chris Mumby says World at War, Sergeant Bilko, Sharp, Secret Army, Danger UXB, SAS, Rogue Heroes. So I think a lot of stuff's covered there. And, you know, we know the Banner Brothers of the world. We know the Pacifics of the world. They sort of changed what war movies, what military history and TV could become and be. And I think we're still feeling the effects of Banner Brothers even now, not in terms of like military content, but in terms of just how TV is viewed, it's up there, isn't it? It's always up there with the best miniseries.
Mm.
But that was HBO. For me, sorry, go on, man.
Just going to say that, no, you know, for me, I would go with, from a childhood perspective, I would go with Sharp, Hornblower, probably Hello, Hello, because it was on constantly. Dad's Army.
Never actually seen a full episode of Hello, Hello. Because
You would really enjoy it. It's just a piss take of like Secret Army.
Yeah, but I really like Secret Army. So like to have something really take like the piss out of it.
It's actually genuinely funny.
Okay, I always thought it was a bit low rent. Like,
yeah. There's a lot of innuendo. It was the 80s, Rob. I mean, it was the late 70s, early 80s. So, what else? Oh, Generation War, the German series.
Yes, that is good. That is good.
There's loads. They're all loads. There's tons. We need to do some more series, but it's hard to cover a whole series in one episode. We've done.
Yeah,
but we did that one episode on the Band of Brothers.
Replacements.
I don't know which episode of Replacements that was it?
Yeah.
You know, it's very hard to do.
We covered Rogue Heroes episode. When we were lucky enough to see that. But that was that's difficult.
That's probably the best way of doing it, to be honest. Just like picking favorite moments out of a whole series is probably the only way to do it, unless you have the whole month where you break down
series. I mean, we could.
And of course, we're forgetting the Dirty Dozen as well. Don't forget that one.
Yeah, oh gosh, yeah. Dirty Dozen. Yeah, yeah. Whatever that was called. So, in terms of, that was HBO, as I said, Banner Brothers HBO.
We nearly did it.
We didn't.
We got mental.
Stir crazy. So obviously HBO comes along in the late 90s and it changes what, you know, it's home box office. So it gives you home box office. You get The Sopranos, you get Banner Brothers, and it just goes on. And I always wondered, as we do, we go off on these tangents and we look for things that maybe did or didn't get big so we can cover them on the show. And I came across this one pilot episode and there was hardly anything about it on IMDb. So I've gone away and for about, I think it's about 3 months now, I've been looking up this pilot episode. So CBS, Tour of Duty fame, that's the channel that made it. CBS came out with, in 2001, a pilot episode for a show called Sam's Circus. So Sam's Circus was commissioned by CBS in early 2001, and a Variety article that I dug up from 2001 gave out a rough outline of the show. And it says, Sam Circus will seek to examine various morality tales set against the backdrop of war. The script follows the dynamics between the troops and focuses on how squadrons live and work together. So I was like, okay.
So when was it set? What was it set during?
So the show itself was set during the Battle for Normandy and afterwards.
Right.
More about that as we go along. So to direct was Robert Singer. He's best known for producing and directing Supernatural. He did nearly every episode of that. With the When Trumpets Fade writer, William W. Vaught, penning the screenplay for the pilot in a joint collaboration with CBS and Columbia TriStar. So it was in very much in the same vein of The Combats, the Banner Brothers that had just come out. So I talked to British production company Fire in the Hole. Now, I was talking to Rick Roberts, who is the sort of founder, owner of that, and he sent me some information about the show because they worked on it. So he said, I got involved with Sam's Circus when a few of us hardcore US collectors got involved in Banner Brothers in different ways. I was the youngest of a small group of collectors of American World War II memorabilia and militaria. Some of the guys knew me. We were a small group with no intent, especially in the early mid-90s. So when Banner Brothers came along, they started asking for lots of collectors and dealers that I knew in the UK. Some of these people were friends and got involved in the production. Of course, the production company wanted people who knew their stuff, so I managed to get involved a bit. I also supplied most of the World War II American military uniforms and kit for the American Jeep advert that was used on TV advertising between the US series back in the 2001. It's on the Banner Brothers box set. This was filmed on Utah Beach in the summer of 2001. When filming finished at the end of 2000, the film guys, knowing I was a collector and had also made films, got in touch with kit for sale from the production. I purchased a fair bit of kit from that production, mainly US items and later over 50 German uniforms from the series, as I have a friend who was one of the people who supplied most of the German kit for Banner Brothers. So he supplied the German uniforms for kit for Sam's Circus from the same stuff from Banner Brothers. I think we all hoped that CBS would do the 20 episodes. I don't know if you know, but it was a really up-to-date version of the mid-60s American TV show Combat. Now, Dale Dye would be involved.
Yeah.
You can't have a TV show or a film made in that period without Dale Dye being involved. So, yes, no, totally. Warriors, Inc. were involved. And this comes from his website. Daily for listening. Hope you're well. So he says, the intent was to follow a basic infantry squad fighting in a European theatre of war. I chose a typical outfit, no rangers, no paratroopers, just basic grunts. We decided that the unit should be 3rd Squad, 2nd Platoon, Charlie Company, 1st Battalion, 16th Infantry of the 1st Infantry Division. This specific designation was only important to the actors to give them home within the Big Red One. They wore the division on their shoulders in the pilot. So it's very...
cool.
Different feeling series to these like elite guys that you get in Banner Brothers, or you know, how we perceive them, I guess. And they're not paratroopers, they're regular soldiers, yeah. Much like Combat. So the 60-minute pilot was going to be trying to evoke Saving Private Ryan, obviously with the crew from Warriors Inc. putting the principal cast through their basic training boot camp like they did on Platoon and many others. A replica Tiger tank was even built based on a T-55 chassis. A lot of effort was being put in by CBS. And the music for this pilot was created by Jay Gruska, who's kindly allowed me to share some of the music that he made for that pilot. And I got in contact with him.
Oh, cool. Nice.
Yeah. And he told me this about working on the pilot. It was my first experience writing a circa World War II type score. There was very little money in the budget for music, so we recorded with a small brass band, 2 percussionists and strings in a box. And I'll play you some of that music now. Thank you. So there we go. I think that's the key theme there, like the main theme.
I like that. That was very good.
Very like Medal of Honor-y.
Yeah, trumpet-y. but it's that martial trumpet grass feel to it.
It really evokes that setting, doesn't it? Mm. And there's a few other ones I'll play as well during the episode. But yeah, there's all different kind of ones. So there's more drama-y, tension kind of ones like this.
Little motifs.
Yeah, so as you can see, like, there's a lot of effort being put into this. So the cast, there was one picture of Sam Circus cast. It seems to be the only picture that you can find. And we'll obviously share that on the Twitter when this episode goes live. Also, I reached out to all the cast to try and get quotations and things.
Naturally, of course.
Haven't got back to you yet. Even the director and the writer I've tried to track down haven't got back to me yet.
Do you remember this pilot you were in 20 yeah, plus
exactly.
years ago?
Exactly. It was mainly that. Yeah, I was trying to get in contact with the writer. Anyway, so leading Sam Circus as the eponymous Sergeant Sam Van Handel was played by Tyler Christopher, who at the time was known for his time with the American soap opera General Hospital. Kevin Connolly as Corporal Little Sarge. John Rather, Daniel Brocklebank as Private Mooch. Russell Sams as Private Wheels Tolland. And Richard Spate Jr., Richard Spate Jr. was in it too. He played Skip Muck on Band of Brothers. As Bedpan, he played the medic. And Michael Gray as Chief and John Hawkes as Gunner. So it's quite an up-and-coming cast there.
Yeah. Some good good character nicknames there too.
Yeah,
classic.
Exactly. Yeah, easy to remember. You know, archetype characters. You've got your medic, your gunner, your rough sergeant. Very combat-y. Yeah.
Wonder which one was going to be the religious guy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. Well, the pilot dealt with things like that as well, what there is a little bit about it out there. So what happened in the pilot? So there is one review on this on IMDb from 2003 from someone who saw it. So they say, the story is told through the eyes of PFC Tolland Wheels, the 18-year-old greenie who appears on screen as in a moving truck with his unit in Normandy in France 21 days after D-Day in 1944. The episode introduces the main cast and sets up the various character traits. For example, Gunner is a heavy smoker, Bedpan is a heavy drinker. The character of Wheels narrates the pilot that culminates in an assault on a heavily defended German position. And there is some footage of Sam Circus on Vimeo in a showreel by Adam Kane, who was the DOP. And you can go away and find that. I'll put a link. And it's very like that. You can see that end attack in that clip of them attacking this German position, waiting for the P-51s to come in and do their job. And it looks great. Like there's nothing in that clip that you would say looked bad. So Matt's just seen the clip there that Adam Kane cut. And I think you'll agree, Matt, it's quite high production value for the time.
Oh yeah, that's good stuff. That's that looked better than When Trumpets Fade. Mm. That looked pretty much Band of Brothers level of stuff to me.
Yeah, exactly. It's a commercial channel, CBS, putting a lot of effort into this pilot. But what happened to Sam Circus, I hear you all cry, the thing you've just learned about 20 minutes ago. So, I mean, I surmise that surely, a network TV alternative to HBO Smash Brannock Brothers, which at the time was still massively being talked about. You know, it got transmitted over here very close to the US release. There was a lot of buzz about it. You know, I remember everyone was re-going and re-watching Saving Private Ryan. People were re-going over the classics, things like that. Would it have been a smash hit if it had got on the air? And the only person that I could find that had any real, like, sort of reflection on this was Dal Dye on the Warriors Inc. website. So he said, it never even saw the light of a cathode ray tube. The cast was a bunch of terrific young actors that portrayed a World War II infantryman extremely well, and the producer and director, Bob Singer, had his heart in the right place to make a subsequent episode as good as the pilot. Why it never got onto the network radar screen remains a mystery, and no amount of research I've been able to do ever yielded a credible reason.
It's a real shame. It does look really promising.
Yeah. somehow something doesn't even get.
Well, you know, there's so many stories of cool things being made that never get aired, or get, you know, the pilot gets aired.
It's crazy to me. And even like a limited run,
big waves,
or even releasing the pilot as like a backdoor pilot. This is like we've made this thing. What do you think? Like a TV movie, almost event type thing, to maybe not even lose your money. Who knows? So I did some a little bit more digging, because I was like, right, people have seen this, it exists, people have memories of seeing the video. But apart from that, the pilot seems to have been wiped clean from the internet. There's a few mentions of the show on message boards from around the time, like certain reenactors that worked on it, people that did little bits and bobs on it remember, and some people remember seeing the Tiger Tank at like War and Peace show and all these military vehicle events, and they go, oh, I've seen a Tiger Tank from this show. Apparently it's used in a show called Sam Circus. Did anything come of that? And everyone's like, no, don't know what happened to it. But I found one listing for a DVD screener of it from about 2005, and then The Trail Runs Cold. So at least one copy is out there somewhere. And apparently the Rick at Fire in the Hole has it on video somewhere, but he doesn't in the boxes upon boxes upon boxes of things he's collected over the years. He just doesn't know where it is. He's told me if he finds it, he'll try and get it digitized for me, or he'll do something for us to try and find it if he ever comes across it. But, you know, the reasoning for Sam Circus never getting to the air is a mystery even to this day. And I still don't know why it's not even been resurrected or even talked about since. But that's the mystery of Sam Circus. That's as much as I've found.
Wow. Well, I don't know. It's weird, isn't it? Because you think about it, and if more shows like that had come out around the time, would things have snowballed? Would we have had more and more? Would the, you know, that SBR, Band of Brothers boom that we got, would that have continued rather than sort of petered out by the mid-2000s?
Well, like, pop culture-wise, I mean, you get the Brothers in Arms game series that comes out in 2005, and that's still riding that wave.
Mm.
Like, because World War II shooters were still really popular until the 2010s. God,
All the Medal of Honor games and Call of Duty, etc.
Yeah, and that kind of thing was really popular. So I don't know how or why CBS couldn't fit it in, unless they felt it, you know, if it had been a loss, it had been a huge loss for them. The money wise,
maybe the budget was just too much.
Perhaps. I mean, you know, we've seen from that. I hope you guys do go and watch this show reel that Adam Kane made, because you'll see the production values on screen. In it, there's definitely something in there. There's a lot of effort been put in, but I can't work out how in a post SBR, post Band of Brothers world that a show like this wouldn't have found a home. Because they've made like Generation Kill, they've made a few series on like the Iraq War, things like that. So I can't think why this wouldn't have found its audience, especially on CBS, where potentially everyone could see it. And then, you know, making money on an international, selling it internationally, seeing how Band of Brothers have been over here. There's just, it makes no sense to me how something like this wouldn't have found its audience.
Yeah, it's definitely a mystery. But, you know, as we've seen with, you know, all these films and TV shows, there are so many cogs moving to make them happen.
Yeah.
If just one falls down or is unsupported, then it can tank an entire project.
Exactly. So, yeah. Oh, but CBS must have a copy of it somewhere. Like, just Like, I surmise, I wrote a presentation for this. I was going to make a YouTube video about it, but I haven't. This is why it's on the show, because I thought, where better to share it than the FOF audience, who's going to really be into this kind of thing. But I surmise, you know, why don't they dust it off, stick it on streaming? Stick it on something, put it up on YouTube, you know, see if there's a, I'm not saying you'd resurrect it because everyone's 20 years older now, but at least test the waters on your product, unless they wrote it off as a tax write-off, because that sometimes happens. And then if you do that, you can't show it sometimes. So that's what happened with the Batgirl movie that Warner Brothers canned. They wrote it off as a tax write-off, and then you can't show it. You burn the negatives almost.
Yeah. Good job on the digging. I mean, that was very, very interesting. I'd never heard of it before you mentioned it the other
day. No one had. That's half the problem.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello there. Sorry to interrupt. I wanted to let you know that you can now join our supporting cast over on Patreon. As thanks for your support, you'll be able to help us pick films, submit questions for guests, have first pick on brand new and exclusive merch, and much more. Thank you for your support. Now back to the show.
So, after mystery lost pilots for TV series that never got made, what have you watched recently, Matt? Something that is actually tangible and real.
Tangible and real. Wow. Well, on the plane back, the other day, I watched Spielberg's The Fablemans at last.
Yes. And
it's not a war movie, but he does make a little war movie in the movie.
Yeah, it's cool. I've seen those clips.
And yeah. It's really good. It's really cool. You know, he manages to like bring together a lot of guys to make this little short where it's like a sergeant leads his platoon into a valley. And it's set in like North Africa, I think. Mm. It's really good. Like there's a little montage bit where he shows how they like kick up dust by like making a seesaw with a plank of wood, and someone stamps on the plank of wood and it throws up dust like it's a mortar landing. There's a big hand-to-hand bit, and you know, the Germans have got like grey t-shirts on with a little eagle paint stenciled onto them.
It's cute.
It was just really interesting. I'd love to know if that's based, I assume it is, on something they actually did, because the story is heavily based on.
I remember on the Saving Private Ryan special edition video I used to have, if you let it run on, there was this little documentary about Spielberg making these like war movies when he was little. And there's little clips like that in there. And they had like a cockpit of a plane, and they do things where they like, you know, twist the camera around to make it look like they were flying. And it's really good. Yeah. Like the guy just loves cinema. But I can't not talk to you about that. I absolutely loved, I've seen a clip of it, David Fincher as John Ford.
Oh, it's David Lynch, yeah.
David Lynch, sorry, I always get those two guys.
Yeah, no, it's great.
Last week, I got fucking Mark Bolan and James Bolan confused.
Oh, you did, yeah.
So my getting people mixed up strikes again.
Yeah, David Lynch. And it's great, isn't it? He's talking to a very young Fableman Spielberg about, you know, what makes an image interesting is like, where's the horizon? It's at the bottom, it's at the top. If you put it in the middle, it's boring. It's great.
So good.
Really is great.
It's just John Ford, man. Absolute king. But yeah, I've been watching a lot of Cold War sort of panic stuff lately. So I went with Twilight's Last Gleaming, and I watched 7 Days in May, and then I watched Failsafe.
Threads?
I didn't do Threads, no. That's a bit much. That's still not Cold War panic. That's the panic's well gone by the time Thread comes around. That's like
panic's very tangible.
That's Cold War torture. Yeah. That's what it is.
No, they're great movies.
Those three movies are fantastic. I surmise we should do a Cold War panic month.
And cover those
movies in depth.
And that's a very winter topic to do. I think
it might be. Yeah.
I don't know why, but it feels like a winter thing.
Nuclear winter.
Yeah, I don't know. But
paddle
yeah,
up on the sofa with a hot mug of cocoa and a blanket for Cold War.
Rounded
panic
it off with Strange Love or something. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think it would really work. I mean, those movies are great. There's some powerhouse performances in there. You've got Burt Lancaster stealing a nuke, Kirk Douglas trying to stop a coup. It's great. There's so much in there. But then
And Henry Fonda trying to decide what city to nuke.
Yeah, that's great.
Yes. what a proposition that is.
Yeah. The ball, it was me. Yes, great. And then I rounded it off by watching, and I haven't kind of got all the way through it because it's so tonally odd. A 1953 film called Combat Squad, starring John Ireland, which is a Korean war movie. But it looks like it was filmed for like a couple of grand in a quarry. It's fantastic. Like, it's everything Classic. Men in War isn't. And it starts off with this huge like cold open where the guys are just fighting a battle. And then they go off and have a little bit of time in like the camp away from the lines. And then they're back at doing battling. And that's basically it. Like, it's the most cliche-ridden thing. Like, it's really bizarre.
We're like, we're out here battling, but, you know.
Pretty much, yeah. It's very odd. There was something it really reminded me of. Well, Men in War, for one, but then how it just sort of starts with the fighting. It was something else it reminded me of. But no, that's on YouTube.
Oh, there's so many of those 50s movies that cold open with,
it
like,
it feels
combat.
Like a proper matinee. Like, it felt it, because it's only 109 minutes, so it felt like it was... Yeah. It was part of a double feature, like kind of like
absolutely, so, like, probably like part of like a matinee afternoon type deal.
Kind of like how Paratroop Command was paired up with a submarine film, like because they were short. It felt like that, like Drive-In, but it really felt like that. But no, it's worth a watch, a bit of fun. But anyway, no, that was, I think this week's a bit more loose because we're preparing to go off to We Have Ways Fest 3. If you're there, come say hello. We'll be giving a talk on the British Army on film. I'm hoping to have some sort of way we can get that to people who aren't going to be there. I think they might be recording it, maybe. I don't know. But more on that as that comes out. If you're at We Have Ways Fest, please come say hello. We love talking to you guys. We love seeing you. And that's it for another week of Fighting on Film. I hope this one was interesting.
Well, I definitely found the Sam Serkis stuff interesting, that's for sure.
Apart from Jay and me, you're the first person to have heard that music probably for like 22 years. So
wow, that's a amazing prospect, isn't it? Wow,
yeah,
that's
cool. I know, right? But anyway, keep it forth for all your war movie reviews and give us a like, a review, and whatever you're listening on. It really helps the show. Why not go over to fightingonfilm.com, start from episode one, and have a foth binge and see how quickly you can catch up to now. And we'll catch you next time. Have a good one, everyone.
And support us on Patreon as well. There's some good perks over there.
Please do. Keep the lights on. Keep the mics running. We really appreciate it. Mm-hmm. Bye, everyone.
Thanks for listening. Bye.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.